You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks and a very special episode where we sit down and interview Tom Spina from Regal Robot. We have the chance to talk about all the stuff that's come out over the last few months and a few hints about what's to come. Myself and my co-host Mark spoke with him. Mark, good chat, wasn't it?
It was a great chat, yeah. In fact, it was so good I could hardly get a word in edgeways because I was so happily content to sit and listen to both you two talk about it. And Tom's great. He's a very generous guy. He's given us a lot of time, you know, the other day. He goes into so much detail about the process and the work, and there's just a general like sheer amount of love and professionalism that they pour into every single piece over Regal Robot.
Couldn't say it better. So you don't hear us rattling on about stuff, you want to listen to it. So here we go, it's our chat, me and Mark talking with Tom Spina from Regal Robot about all the stuff that's come out over the last few months.
Punch it!
So we're joined today by Tom Spina, and we're going to talk about stuff that's come out and maybe a little bit about what's on the horizon and delve into all sorts of nooks and crannies. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. And Mark, I'm very happy to be here. Always nice to hear your voice. Been far too long since we got to see you, man.
It has. Well, I think this whole pandemic thing has put a bit of a mocker on so many things. I mean, usually you'd catch up at Celebration or a New York Comic Con or somewhere. We go for a burger somewhere.
Exactly.
But yeah, life got in the way, didn't it, this year?
Yeah, it's been a strange one. But, you know, it's let us kind of hunker down and go back to the art side of this stuff and really push to develop a lot of new things. Look, every bad situation is an opportunity, and it's what you make of it. And for us, what we really tried to do when we had that long shutdown here in New York was, okay, let's get into development. Let's put our heads together and what can we make that would be really cool that maybe we just haven't had time to develop. Managed to put out a ton of cool stuff this year, and it's just really a little tiny silver lining or bright side to an otherwise very, very trying year.
How would it normally be for you then? Because you do events and you go out to different places and all other entities, you know, like Fanthraxers and all of the Rancho and everybody. You'll plan for a celebration, so presumably you would have been planning for that as you would have been planning for other things. In not that this is ever a good situation, but was it kind of advantageous to give you the chance to just sit back in
a little
bit and plan them?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny too. The obviously it took quite a long time before they actually canceled Celebration, so we were sort of on the fence about that for a while. And you know, when the news came down, it was ultimately, you know, you hate to say it was a relief, but it was obviously the right decision from a health perspective. And so from that side of things, we were a little bit relieved. And then just from a work perspective, yeah, I mean, you know, ramping up for a show like that, especially for a shop like us that where we make the stuff, it's all U.S. based, and it's our crew either in New York or a few other little shops around the country that work with us. It's a handful of people putting this stuff out. And when you've got to bring crates and crates of stuff to a show, that's a lot of work, and just so much mental heavy lifting goes into prep for a show like that. Got a booth to figure out. You've got handout cards to figure out. You've got all your signage and what sales you're going to run and how much material you need and all this stuff. And then you're, you know, on top of that, having to make everything. It's a lot, but you know, it's also so much fun. So on the fan side, I was a little gutted that we couldn't get to go. And obviously was already deep in prep for the panels that I was going to do and stuff too. And those were always so fun and connecting with everybody and just, you know, nerding out over the cantina and whatever else they call me up to talk about.
So in terms of product that's out there already, because it is so slavishly adherent to the stuff that we really saw on the screen, and that's your MO, is to make it as accurate and as detailed and as close as possibly you can, or with some of your other product lines to evoke certain things and you know, it very much of the flavour of those pieces. So what sort of things could we find if we were looking for them?
Well, first off, thank you for that. For me, the flavour is a really great word for that, because to me it is about vibe and feel. You know, it's things that feel Star Wars. It's things that feel original trilogy and classic. And maybe they're not props, but they feel like they could be something off the set, or there's some way to bring a little of that vibe into your home. You know, so we've been developing on two fronts. Our licensor splits two ways now, where we do both furniture and decor on one side of things, and then the other side is replica busts and maquettes and puppets and statues, life-size statues. You know, what that means for us lately is a lot of Chewbacca. we've done a handful, I think about six full life-sized Chewbaccas for people. And those, if you go to our website, you can go to the Custom Character Studio. Just click the big Star Wars link if you go to regalrobot.com. And on the Star Wars link, there's four categories. And in that Custom Character Studio, there's stuff that we have done, you know, sort of as one-offs for people. There's stuff that we do more as runs. A year ago, we released a limited run bust of Chewbacca, where it was just his head and a little bit of collar, very similar to just the amount of the head and bib of the mask, really. And that was initially going to be a Peter Mayhew signature edition. It wound up being a Peter Mayhew tribute edition, with Mark Hamill penning a really nice letter about Peter after he passed that went to everybody that got one. But it was a very limited edition, and we sold out very, very quickly. And we had a lot of people asking about doing custom versions. And so our solution to that was, you know, this custom version has to be different than that original version. We've got to maintain the specialness of that tribute edition. And so what we came up with is this bigger in-house, we just called it the XL Chewie. You know, it's so it's his head, it's his shoulders, it's a little bit of chest and some bandolier. And, you know, it's a real leather bandolier with metal boxes. And, you know, some of those metal boxes are hand formed and things like that. Other ones are, you know, actual found item project boxes like they used in the movie. Everything's hand assembled. Then the whole head, chest, everything there, it's all made by us in New York. It's all hand cast, hand painted, glass eyes, well, acrylic eyes, but same idea. translucent resin teeth, silicone tongue, all of that stuff. And then hand glued hair all over the face that takes quite a long time for each piece. But those went up, I think we put it on the site just a little over a month and a half ago. And we've sold a fair number of them too, which was great. And there's not a specific limit, but the price sort of creates the limit on a piece like that. What we're kind of thinking is we're just going to kind of leave this up for a bit. We want to give folks a chance to get it. This doesn't have to be something that sells out immediately. I like that you can go to our site and buy something, you know, that we can do limited editions, but it's not like you're going to go to the site and literally everything is sold out, which can happen with collectibles, you know. So anyway, that Chewie's been eating up a lot of our energy. We've been I know they're doing about 10 of them right now in the studio, and it's just cool seeing them come together. You know, it starts off, you just see the little chests popping up, the little shoulder bucks everywhere, and then suddenly they have heads, and then the heads have paint, and then the teeth go in. You know, it's just little by little they flesh out. So that's one of the bigger things. We've released the Rancor, which did sell out. That was a limited edition of 83. It was based on a high resolution scan of the real prop. It was made to be as faithful to that prop as we possibly could. So much work went into developing that. It was a year that we were working on that before we were able to release it, and just so excited that so many people responded to it. I didn't know it was a $3,000 piece. It's a big item, but it's something that I don't think you can get anywhere else, and it's something that was very us. And so for that to go up, and I think it sold out in about 36 hours, and I could not believe that. I expected that to be on the site for a month or something, and I would have been very happy with that. But yeah, people were very excited for it. I'm so happy for everybody that jumped in and got it. I think, you know, we're already casting them and starting to make them. So they're going to ship early next year, probably early spring next year is when they're expected to ship. But it's exciting. It's like if you made an album and released it. You work on something in secret for so long, and then you put it out there for the world, and you just hope someone wants it. And that's the big stuff. There's also CZ3 Bust, which we had a signature edition that was very limited that sold out right away, but there is the numbered edition that each one is still made in the USA, hand painted by my guys in New York and weathered and distressed and all of that, and still looks, you know, like you pulled them right out of the sandcrawler. And everyone gets hand numbered, and it's still only, I think, 50 are going to be made.
Hello, I'm Warwick Davis, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
Okay, so was from Star Wars to Jedi the making of a saga as big a thing over there as it was here?
Yeah, big time, yeah.
I probably could say that feature might be as responsible as anything in the world for me doing what I do for a living. Yeah. It impacted me so much as a kid, you know, I mean, much, much younger than you, Mark, much, much older than you, Mark. But, you know, I'm watching this thing at 11 or 12 years old or whatever when I saw it. And we had taped it off of, I think the local PBS station ran it on their like pledge drive. So it had these long breaks of people trying to sell you a tote bag. But seeing that extended look at Phil Tippett's Creature Shop and sitting there going like, who is this guy? Like, you know, this is what he does. Yeah. Like, he's not an accountant or a cop or a lawyer or whatever it is people have to be in life. You know, like, he doesn't, not a janitor somewhere. He gets to make monsters. Like, that's really cool. I obsessed over that thing, and I tried to figure out every little thing in there. It was like, you know, cable necks and latex and rubber and things like that, and trying to fabricate things based on what I saw. I remember making a, trying to make a, I'll say trying to make, because it definitely was not successful, but I was trying to make a Gamorrean guard head out of half inch sheet polyfoam that my dad had got somewhere, and thick heavy wire, like a, I don't know, like an 8-gauge copper wire or something like that. Again, that probably just came out of my dad's garage, and trying to like make a frame out of the wire and running strings through it and trying to make it so I could make the nose, quote, breathe the way it does in that special. Just always wound up, anytime I would pull the string, the mask would like flip up on my head. It didn't really do much. I did the cable, the sheath thing on the cable turns out to be the important part. I didn't know then. Now I know. That made such an impact. And so in that special, they show, you know, the three versions of Jabba the Hutt from the concepts. Yeah. You know, the first one was too human. The second one, too snail-like.
Yes.
And the third one was just
right. The third one was just right.
There you go. And so that just right Jabba, he's got his hands clasped. He's surrounded by vases of foul-smelling liquids and whatever else. And he's leaning on that big piece of stone. And it's just, there's so much attitude in that sculpt. He looks so smug. Yeah. It's
he looks devious, doesn't he?
He does. No, and it's so simple. It's you know, there's something about, especially early Star Wars, the silhouette of these characters, the silhouette of those ships. You went home after you saw Star Wars and you could draw a TIE fighter. You know, you could draw an X-Wing. The minute you came home from that movie the first time, you were able to do that. And there is beauty and magic in simplicity of design. And that, to me, this job is that kind of thing. It is so boiled down and it just reads instantly. And so I have been dying to make a replica of this thing for now decades, it seems. So this year we finally got to do it, and they're available on the site right now. It's a limited edition of 250 pieces. I think there's about 70 or 75 left. They're all hand-painted, made in the U.S. by our guys, and it's just, it's so cool that we get to do that. You know, we can examine the real one at the archives. We take all our pictures. We, in this case, we digitally recreated it from photos and measurements and, you know, basically give people the closest thing they can have to, you know, maybe some sort of late night thievery at the archives. I don't know. That's not always available to everybody. So instead, buy ours.
Yeah, at least you don't get a criminal record with that one, I suppose. So.
Right. Yeah. No.
It's a great point about the silhouettes, though. I know that was very much a George thing, and John Marlowe followed that through, didn't he, with the, you know, with the costume design, yes, especially for A New Hope.
Yeah, Marlowe's stuff is always so good. I love his sketching style. Oh, his sketch of Snaggletooth always gets me. There's some pages. I think it's Gus Lopez has one of John's notebooks, Marlowe's notebooks.
Yeah.
And he put on Facebook when he got it, he put the pages. Like, I think he had a video of him flipping through the pages so you could get the experience of this book and soak up all this art and a lot of it you've never seen before. And there were a few pages where he had gone to, I guess, Stuart Freeborn's workshop, saw the stuff that Stuart was working on, and just made quick sketches of each alien. And with just a few lines, he captured every one of them. They're not masterpieces, but they are instantly evocative of the character. He had a skill for capturing something in simplicity, and I love it.
They're very consistent as well, aren't they? When you look at all of his sketches, yes, you can tell it's him that's drawn it. There's a consistency between all of the different bits of art.
I think that sort of goes through with a lot of the guys. You know, you see when I flip through the making of books, you know, it's like, oh, okay, that's a Joe Johnston. Oh, that's, you know, yeah, Nilo Brodus-Romero. That's Macquarie, obviously. You know, you can always pick that up. Although there were a few, and I, the name's escaping me. There are a few sketches, paintings rather, done for Jedi that were another one of the artists, but in a very Macquarie style. And there's one in particular, it relates to that Jabba. There was one in the archives, the Lucasfilm Image Archives at this point, the digital archives when we were researching. There's a painting of Luke before Jabba the Hutt, and Jabba is very much a painting of Phil's maquette. You know, there's the vases, it's the clasped hands, all of that. And I always thought that was a Macquarie painting, and then I think it was Brandon Allinger had pointed out, oh no, it was done by such and such, and I wish I could remember the name right now, but I guess too many details have come into my brain, and some have gotten pushed out the other ear. What else do we have? We just started a line of wood art plaques. And this probably goes to what you were saying, like, you know, these are not props, but they definitely speak to a particular fan base. Yeah. You know, the Macquarie patch art from Empire Strikes Back is the first one. And it's that patch that was on all of the behind the scenes crew for Empire Strikes Back. Everybody in
the Vader flying.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Everybody in Finsa had those awesome blue hoodies with the, you know, the parkas with the patch on it. I want to say, was it the fan club that did either a sticker or a patch of that that you could buy?
They did both.
Right?
Yeah, it was the Empire fan kit, I think, had the sticker, and then you could get it through the fan club. And I've now got it as a tattoo, funny enough, on my right arm.
Do you? Oh, that's awesome.
Very, very familiar to me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've never gotten tattoos, but I've always said if I did, it's going to be the Marlowe Snaggletooth. Like, I always thought that's nobody will know what that is. But and then the other plaque is from the cutscene. I mean, how many licensees out there are going like, what can we do from the decor in a cutscene from Empire? But it's the Wampa warning sign, you know, that 3PO tears off the wall and sends that one poor hapless snowtrooper to his doom, which the timing in that shot just cracks me up every time. You know, the guy opens the door. Womp arm immediately just pulls his buddy in, and he's just like, well, close the door, we're good, you know. Vader shows up like, what happened? Nothing. Where's Bob? Don't worry about him, we're gonna go. They went that way. You know, but so I always thought that was a cool bit of art. Rob DiNicolette, the shop book creative director with me, recreated the art from that, from the best resolution stills we could get from Lucasfilm. And and then now there it is. It's, you know, it's weird to me to see stuff that goes from a sketch or a screen to an actual product, and like to be packing something and send it home to someone. It's like, I don't know. You spend your time making this stuff, especially when you're doing like the big stuff. Like I can't say what it is right now. We're working on a big creature for someone. It's a bust. It'll be a wall-mounted bust. We are going to put it on the site so people can get it. Wall-mounted bust. It's probably about 3.5-4 feet tall, and we're working on that. And it's like you spend the time when you're making it thinking about the person who's going to get it, you know, and in my mind, I'm going like, he's going to love when he sees this part. I can't wait till he, you know, it's like he's going to put it on the wall and he's going to look at it, but it's not, it's going to be a day or two before he realizes when he gets around the side and he sees this, you know, or whatever it is you're doing. You know, you want, it's like, we really, that's the kind of care that goes into the stuff we're doing. You know, we really get obsessed with this stuff. We did Jawas recently that are not yet on the site, but will be life-sized, filthy, disgusting creatures. And, you know, every inch of those has thought put into it. You know, is the fabric right? Is the underrobe right that you don't even see? Is the type of light right with the reflector? Is the, you know, are the hands the right type of gloves? Does the hair on the hands right? Is the distressing look good? The physical distressing of the fabric, and then the paint distressing where you make it look sandy and dusty. Is there, are the bandoliers, do they look old enough? Does he look like he smells yet? Because if he doesn't, then you got to go further with it all. You know, like it's that's what we do, you know? So that's some of what's been going on. We've been busy. And that doesn't even get into the other business, which Tom Spina Designs, where we're still doing tons of restoration work at the moment, lots of custom mannequins. So the last time, Mark, you were at the studio, I like that I say Mark as if that matters because you both named Mark. But so the last time you were at the studio, we were still just in the original two spaces, right? Yeah, okay. So right. We have since, where we used to have our photography studio, the little photo area, we have since, that is now a big set of double glass doors, and that we've taken over the space behind us. So now we're about double the square footage we used to have.
Wow.
So the area where you used to, you know, which was, I don't know, were we working on the Lucas Home Archives restorations when you came that time?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, you guys just didn't enjoy that trip at all then.
Oh, we just came for the pizza.
Right. Well, it is New York, so I get that. But so that whole area used to be the main workshop. That's now crating and shipping, receiving, and all of our mold storage and our Regal Robot product warehouse now, and then more office space. And then when you go through that back doorway is now a new space that's bigger than the old workshop, much bigger, that now is the proper workshop for the restoration stuff and for like detail sculpting and things like that and basic mold and cast. And then we still have the other slop space, which is more for big fiberglass work and the, you know, sloppier mold and cast type stuff and sanding and whatever else. But it'll be cool once you know, next time you come out, it'll be a whole new place. I mean, it's very, very different than the last time.
Wow. Wow. Just going back to what you're saying there about restoration stuff, the research. As a fan, as somebody who got so into that whole Star Wars Jedi era, that must light you and your team up almost as much as doing it.
For sure, especially for me, specifically. When we were working on the Jabba maquette in particular, my friend Tony Cipriano did the digital work on that, recreating that thing. And Rob and I at the studio would just sit there and you'd just hear back and forth all day, too snail-like. You know, and we just like throw that back and forth because it's just you're reveling in the fact that you're able to do this as your job, you know, like that you're now that guy you saw on screen who got to make monsters for a living. You know, that's and we just absolutely love that. And we're working on something right now. Oh, let's see how much I can say about this. It's another custom character studio thing, and it's not going to be released probably until spring next year will be when people start to see it. But it's a very involved project. It's a number of sculpted elements, and it's a creature/character kind of based stuff. But we're doing research on multiple levels. Things like digital assets from a production, things like physical assets from a past production, things like vintage photo reference, and then talking with the folks that made things to get reference that they had that maybe Lucasfilm didn't even have. And just, you know, it's like a dog with a bone when you get to that, you know, it's just, you dive into this sort of stuff and it absorbs you and until that thing is made. And then you sit there and you look at it once it's made and you just kind of go like, why is this on my shelf? This didn't exist a little while ago. And now here it is. This is insane. It doesn't make sense to me. And then you start to realize, other people are going to get this on their shelf. This is really cool.
One of the things that strikes me is that when you're doing this research, when you're looking into it, I'll give you an example. When I saw the Rancor, I didn't know it had an earring.
Oh, yeah.
And then we see all those beautiful photographs that you put out through Regal of the Rancor, and there's the, you know, people can clearly see now that that dude had an earring.
Right.
What's the biggest surprise you found, you know, when you've been delving into it and you suddenly go, look, I've got an eye for this thing, but I had no idea that fella had, I don't know, a third nipple, right, whatever. You know, that what have you found that you were not expecting?
You leave that out of this. I'm still sensitive about that. No, for the Rancor especially. So the earring, what was interesting is, you know, the one in the archives, which we got to spend a ton of time with, has an earring, but it's different from the earring that was in the movie. And so we went in planning to replicate the earring that's on the piece, only to discover, looking at the vintage stills, that the earring is different on the movie. So we changed course and we did the one that's in the movie, obviously. But the thing that really got me is, so there's a couple things. And one is he's got these little cuts all over him. And they're just these little fleshy, like little wounds. There's three or four of them, and they're not really super visible in the puppet as he is now. I don't know if he's just darkened over time or he's gotten repainted somewhere, but in the early stills, you can really see him. And then when we got looking at the real prop and the scan, you know, they're still there. They just sort of weren't fleshy anymore. So they didn't pop. But the biggest one is his tail. So I think of the Rancor as all one color brown, like the Kenner toy.
Yeah.
Literally just one medium brown, done. But looking at the actual prop, and in particular, there's a really famous shot of Phil Tippett painting the Rancor. And I'm looking at that picture, and I've seen that picture countless times in my life. Mm. And I notice that his armor plating on his lower back and his tail is bone white. Mm. And I kind of go, everything else on this thing is fully painted, but that's bone white. And I'm just going, is the tail, you know, did he just not paint the tail yet? But I also know as an effects guy that that's a staged shot, probably, that, you know, somebody came through with a camera and they said, hey, can we take a picture of this? And Phil got a paintbrush and stood in front of it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a done piece almost at that point when they're shooting it. So then we start looking at the behind the scenes photos in the Lucasfilm Image Archives of them shooting the scene. And sure enough, he's got a bone colored tail. And I my mind was blown. I'm like, how is it 40 years later, almost, we're still discovering things? And that was one of my favorite things we got to include in ours. And the other thing is that we get to talk to the people that made this stuff, because I'm very lucky to know a lot of these folks. And so I wrote Phil and I'm like, hey, you know, I looked at this picture and I saw this. I looked at this picture and I saw this. You know, what's the story? Was that on purpose? And he said, you know, it was something they were thinking of, like chitinous kind of plating or whatever you would call it, like exoskeleton type stuff.
Yeah.
And he said they didn't go crazy with the paint, though, because they knew they weren't going to see it. But yeah, it was supposed to be this bony tail. So we incorporated that into ours. We added a little extra distressing to it so it doesn't jump out too bright from the rest of the stuff. So it's like a really cool weathered, you know, old bone look. And that's just, yeah, that's something that out of nowhere that comes out. And you just kind of go, wow, like, how are we still finding new stuff? That's so freaking cool.
I do a lot of costuming. And the way I see it is that until you start working on a costume, you think you know it, but you don't.
Yes.
I mean, like when I was doing my Boba Fett, my Empire Strikes Back Boba Fett, but, you know, the little bits like the dental files and the helmet and, you know, the Casio calculator and the forearm and all that kind of stuff. And because I think you can look at these photos, but then it's not until you start going, right, actually, how does this all go together? How does this all going to work when we kind of like try and recreate it?
Yeah. And so we did the Boba Fett for Sideshow years ago. We prototyped their life-size piece. So I know exactly what you're talking about, that, because I thought I knew Fett, and I'm pretty hip when it comes to Star Wars knowledge, you know, but only once we started diving in to recreate that to that level did we discover so much stuff as we went. And it's just really, it's an incredibly complex costume to do right.
No, it really is.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
I guess it's about 6 or 7 months ago, maybe it's even a little more now, Jon Favreau leaked the first image of Mandalorian Season 2. And it was a picture of a maquette of a Gamorrean guard, but stripped down, wearing a Praetorian sort of looking, you know, gladiatorial kind of Gamorrean. I happen to know the fellow who sculpted that. And through our connections with Lucasfilm and Disney and all this other stuff, we have gotten to recreate that with direct lineage to that original sculpt as a new maquette for people to buy. So right now they can go to regalrobot.com and then click on the custom character studio after click Star Wars custom characters. And it should be the top item in that section. There'll probably be a news post in the blog about it too, if you need an easier way to get there. And you'll see plenty of pictures, fully painted, made in the USA, all hand painted. And again, just direct, like one-to-one lineage to that original sculpt. There is nothing that's closer than this to that original sculpture that was made for the show. It's, again, it's one of these special things where it's, I love concept pieces. I love both the sculpture element of it, but just the idea that it's, this is someone's imagination running wild with something that was on a page. And the fellow who sculpted's a great guy, and it's just so cool to be able to put this out there for folks. And I've had one in my office for the last few weeks because I'm kind of lucky that way. But I know how cool it is to have it on a shelf, and I think a lot of folks are going to like it. And he's kind of, it's a big chunky piece. It's almost 12 inches tall. He's beefy. Wow. You know, it's all poly resin. It's and comes on the same kind of wood base as was in that picture Favreau shared. And I'm really excited about this one. And it's another limited edition. There's only 250 pieces being made. So you can go to the site and order one. There's payment plan, yada, 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 all of that fun stuff. But no matter what, go to the site, check it out. And if you like the photos, share it around, tell your friends.
So Mando Mundi is the thing that we're sort of getting ready to launch into. Yeah. Is Mando Mundi going to keep you busy?
Very. Yeah, basically every week for the next, I think it's either 4 or 5 weeks, we'll have something new coming out. And it's all really cool stuff. We have another magnet coming out in our Beast Collection series. We've teased that on social. So if you're following us, we're at Regal Robot everywhere. You might already have an idea of what the next one's going to be. We have a new director chair coming. You guys can probably guess what logo will be on that, but I can't say. We have another one of the wood plaques that we're doing coming out. We have another. This is my favorite out of all of them. And I wish I could tell you. So people love that little bone skull we did of the Boba Fett, you know, Bantha skull emblem or Mythosaur, depending on Mythosaur. How old you are. If you're my age, it's a Bantha. But so we have that little one. It's about, I don't know, $35-$40. And it's just all hand-distressed and really cool and detailed. And we have a really, really cool companion piece to that is Mandalorian-themed that just sits beautifully on a shelf. And I can't wait for people to see that. I believe that might be the first one that comes out. I think that comes out on 11/2. On November 2nd. So stay tuned for that. Again, just follow us. That's the easiest way to keep track of what we're doing, or sign up. If you go to the website, we have an email mailing list. We don't hammer you with email. We really only write if something's coming out. A lot of folks don't want to miss stuff, so it's a good way to keep in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we try and cover as much as we can on FanthaTracks.
Oh, you guys are so good.
You have, it's great to cover, and you have so much stuff coming out. We've alluded to it. You've got your magnets range as well, mm-hmm. which people are just flipping out for. Tell us a little bit more about that, because that range is just exquisite.
Thank you. It's us trying to do something artistic and different, and to come up with a way to make, you know, we call it the Elements Collection. The idea is, or Elements series, where it's elements, it's bronze, it's brass, it's silver, it's bone, it's stone, you know, so we're taking some element like that and making an artistic interpretation of one of these characters or beasts, or, you know, sometimes even prop type stuff. Like we've got the little Mandalorian grav charge magnet where, you know, the prop itself has, it almost looks like a magnet because he just sticks it everywhere. So I feel like that's the sort of thing where it gives us a chance to make something that's more than a tchotchke. It's not just, you know, some hastily painted or manufactured sort of thing. They're all really cool designs. They're made by our artists, and then they're all hand cast, hand painted, all of that by the team here. And yeah, we're having a lot of fun with that. The next beast is really cool. We've already made a couple hundred pieces of it in anticipation for the folks buying them. And we've been just trying to keep up on the IG-11 and the child set, the Baby Yoda and IG set that we did. Yeah. That's been the one that probably has sold the best this year. The others are all doing well, but that seems to be the one where it's just like, well, we need more IG-11s. You know, cast up some more babies. Let's go.
And they're unlimited. There's no end limit to that. So, if people want them, you can make them.
Yeah, at the moment, those are all available. It's something where they won't be available forever. There will be a time where we put out a different series and we retire this one. But yeah, for the moment, you know, get to the site, get it now. And but if you're waiting a week or something, you're not going to run into a problem with them selling out.
At the moment, obviously, you only ship in continental U.S., don't you, in the U.S. territories. Yeah. Is there any plans to expand that for international market?
Gosh, I wish I could say yes. It's a challenge on a few fronts. And it's something that, you know, we do get on a lot of our, you know, social media. People are asking about that, and we get a ton of email about that as well. The challenge is sort of twofold. So for starters, our license only permits us to ship to the U.S. Every license has a territory. Our territory is U.S. and U.S. territories. So that includes, you know, Puerto Rico and Guam and other territories. It includes military bases where soldiers are stationed around the world. But other than that, you know, it's got to be a U.S. location. To change that, it's a bit of an effort on the legal and contract side. There has to be some agreement struck, and then there also has to be there's a lot that goes on the contract side, and things like guarantees of sales in different locations and paying ahead on royalties in certain locations and safety testing for each location and all of this that, you know, it really becomes a tough, tough balance to expand. The licensing game, and this is not just a Disney thing, the licensing game is geared towards massive companies. We are a tiny, tiny shop. We do a run of something that's 250 pieces. That's huge for us. Most companies won't even look at something if it's only 250 pieces. For us to expand, the volume that would be needed, it probably outweighs the effort required at the moment. You know, maybe someday there's going to be a tipping point. The other thing is it has to be dealt with for each territory. So, you know, for us to get worldwide on stuff, there's you've now got to do all of this stuff for all of these different territories. And it becomes it's something we would love to do. But money wise, it just doesn't work right now. And hopefully someday it does.
Okay, well, I suppose what that means is that me and Mark just need to make friends with some U.S. military personnel in one of the U.K. bases or something.
One thing that occurs to me is that the Mandalorian very much feel, and Rogue One and Solo to a degree, but they very much feel like they are part of the OT. Is that kind of how it feels to you, that when you're working on it, like the Gamorrean piece and other stuff that's coming, it still has an OT vibe, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. No, and that's why we've done so much with it. We've been very classics focused for a long time, that OT focus, because that's what we grew up with. And that's what I was always obsessed with. I love the other stuff, but that's really where my heart is. And, you know, when it comes to and also I think the age range of the people we're aiming this stuff at, it's people who this imprinted on early. Mandalorian, I think, hits those same notes, and I think it hits a lot of those same fans. And so, yeah, we've done a bunch of Mandalorian pieces, and now we have a whole bunch of new ones coming out. And it's, yeah, it feels good to play in that sandbox, and it feels cohesive. It fits.
So tell us, where can people find you? If people want to find you online, if they need to contact Regal, what's the best place to do it and how?
So they can always go to our website, regalrobot.com. They can also go to my other site, tomspinadesigns.com. If they love movie stuff, if they love even stuff other than Star Wars, there's plenty there to dig into. And then finding us on social. We're at Regal Robot everywhere. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on Pinterest. But yeah, find us, follow us, go to YouTube, check out our videos. And if you like what you see, send us a note. Tell us if there's something you want to see us do. Send us a note. Tell us. We love hearing from folks and just engaging with our friends and fans out there in the Star Wars world.
Fantastic. We're going to let you go because you're a busy man and it's early morning for you, but it's mid-afternoon for us. So thanks for your time, Tom. We will definitely speak again soon. But for now, all the very best.
Absolutely. And I can't wait till all this lifts. We have you back for some pizza.
Look forward to that.
All right, man. Cheers, guys.
If you want to continue the conversation and if you want to let us know maybe your thoughts and opinions, drop us an email. And to do that, Mark's going to tell you how you can get in touch.
If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTrax.com or check out the FanthaTrax app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. If you want to send in listeners questions, email us radio@FanthaTrax.com. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTrax. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and we like 5-star reviews on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTrax intro music, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers.
Coming up next on FanthaTrax Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.